You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible.
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Wait, am I really like that gay, guys? This is what I need to know. Am I that gay?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes.
I think. Yes. Is it the Jeep or the scooter or the pit bull?
It's all of it.
I'm dyking out, you're dyking out. Let's dyke out together. See what it's all about.
Dyking out!
Hi, and welcome to Dyking Out, a podcast that has found itself in the orbit of celesbians, and there's no place we'd rather be. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
I'm Melody Kamali, and today we're dyking out with comedian and activist Kristen Becker about culture shock.
Buckle up for that, but guess what? We have an announcement, like a real announcement. We have a live recording coming up. We haven't done a live recording of the podcast. Melody, you've been co-host, so this is going to be your first one.
So excited.
At Caveat in Manhattan. So if you live in the New York area or you're going to be here Wednesday, October 13th at 9:30 p.m., tickets are on sale. Now you can check our website or go to Caveat's website. I need to update our website. Our guest is the iconic Jenna Lyons.
Can't stop, won't stop with the celesbians. We're keeping the party going. I'm thrilled. I mean, yes. What is happening here?
It's going to be an iconic night because Jenna Lyons is an iconic person. If the name doesn't ring a bell, Google it. Look it up. You'll know. You see her. She was at the helm of J. Crew for years and is just a style icon and a later in life queer. So that is very exciting. Also, remember, we love the reviews that we've been getting on Apple Podcasts. So please continue the 5-star reviews. And if you have just a minute, write up a little something nice. We appreciate it. What else? Oh, my gosh.
I mean,
you know, if you follow us. Yeah. Gayest thing. Tide Mutual gayest thing.
We have a mutual gayest thing to report. I mean, if you're not following Dyking Out on social media, first of all, why? Second of all, you may have missed that we had in our presence at our last watch party at Henrietta Hudson for the L Word, 2 stars from the L Word. Carolyn, who were those 2 stars?
Kate Manig and Leisha Haley.
What?
You might know them better as Shane and Alice.
So that
that's
happened.
Another announcement. We're still doing our watch parties at Henrietta Hudson until the end of the season. And we hope you still come because we do have swag and prizes each week. That is realistically the only time that Leisha Haley and Kate Manig will be at a Henrietta Hudson watch party, at least this season. But they had fun. How do we know they had fun? Because we sat with them for like 15 or 20 minutes.
They told us.
We were all having so much fun, and we talk about it in detail. We spill some tea. on our Patreon off-topic episode. Sorry to do this to you, but it was a lot to share. We don't have time for it here. So if you go to patreon.com for as little as $5 a month, you get an extra episode every week where we share the deets on what's going on in our lives, our personal lives, and some behind-the-scenes stuff like this. It was truly a dream, and there is, you know, more to come, we think, with Alicia and Kate. As they may have promised us, which we may have on record.
We sure do. Oh my God. Yeah. Maybe we'll put some of that footage up on Patreon too, because your wife definitely filmed, I want to say, the entire evening, but especially us interacting with them from afar. Yes. I love our personal paparazzi, Cecilia Bergier.
Shout out to my amazing, amazing wife. So let's pick a quick other gayest moment so that we can each shine in our gayness. Melody, what is the other gayest thing you did this past week?
Consistently gay week, okay? Just 2 days after that incredible night with Kate and Leisha at the L Word Watch party, you and I went aboard ship a yacht full of lesbians, thanks to the Lavender Menaces. They're at the Lavender Menaces on Instagram. Yes. They do a, I believe, monthly yacht party. It's still relatively new, right? This was the first lesbian yacht party that was actually like sailing around. I believe the last few have been docked, and it's just been sort of a party in Greenpoint in Brooklyn. But we set sail for what? Like, almost 4 hours.
4 hours?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a beautiful night. The weather was beautiful. This is our first time doing one of these events with the Lavender Menaces. So we wanted to scope it out before talking about it. We let people know that we were going to be there, but we wanted to make sure that it felt inclusive and diverse. And it was.
And it was.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a very diverse crowd.
They had a bar. They had a drag show.
Yes. Phoebe Jeebies, I believe, was the performer.
Phoebe Jeebies was the drag queen. We also got like a personal firework show. That was just incredible. For just for us. I mean, I was hosting. This was my friend Ever's first day.
Past guest.
Past guest of the podcast. What was Ever's topic? Being outed?
Being outed.
Yeah, as Ever was outed by their hometown, small town newspaper after they came out. But yeah, Ever is one of my dear, dear friends. They flew in. They're staying with me for 3 weeks. And what an incredible first thing to do. Ever's only been in New York once, and it was truly for like less than 48 hours. And it was the day after Trump was elected. So not the best visit. They spent their time protesting. This time they got to see more of the city and a lot of the city. Amazing, clear night.
Yes.
Incredible views. And then out of nowhere, a fireworks show. Just to be surrounded by lesbians from all over the tri-state area. We met people from all over who had come in for that. It was incredible.
It was a lovely evening.
So lovely.
Yeah. And it wasn't too crowded. You know, some people might be worried still with COVID and whatnot. I don't know. You'd have to ask them about their limitations in terms of capacity. But I think more people should go than it'd be a real party. But the weather was so gorgeous that we thought we'd be dancing on the boat. But it was like the perfect weather evening that a lot of us were just outside hanging out and admiring the fresh New York air.
I mean, we were right up on Lady Liberty.
Yes.
Like we could see her laugh lines. So close.
Yeah.
I mean, does it get gayer than that? A yacht full of lesbians? Tell me, Carolyn, what is the gayest thing for you then?
Possibly equal. I don't know. I mean, yacht full of lesbians is pretty gay. And when we say lesbians, it's like inclusive.
I mean, yeah, it's there.
They weren't, you know, checking your lesbian status card.
Non-binary people. There were two gay men there too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So just like we'll say queer yacht party.
Yes. Queer yacht party. On Tuesday, I hung out with four past guests of the podcast in one day. Granted, three of them were at the same time. But I'll start with, I was catching up with past guest and past guest co-host Kendall Payne.
Just ran into Kendall last night.
I saw. So Kendall and I haven't seen each other since the pandemic and everything, and we're long overdue for a catch up. So we got together, we're having a drink and a bite to eat outside. And so funny, this new listener who started listening because of the watch party. So they've been to all the Henrietta Hudson watch party.
Nice.
Hung out with them a little bit at the last one. Shout out to Hallie. And Hallie just happens to be walking by me and Ken. It was a little disorienting because I'm like, wait, I just met this person the other night. And she's holding her phone and she's like, I'm listening to you right now.
Holy
and
shit.
Sure enough, she was just randomly walking by this place in Soho listening to Dyking Out and showed me. And,
gay.
You know, I'm pretty sure Kendall thought that I paid to have that moment happen. But thanks for making me look like a total lesbian, Hallie. I appreciate it. And I went from there to meet up with past guest Kelly Quinn and Kelsey Bailey. And we went to go see Tao Gwen, another past guest of the podcast. Tao was in town opening for Julian Baker. Wow. So that's a lot of gay energy right there. Tao has a new band that she's performing with. So she ditched the guys. I shouldn't say ditched, but she's no longer has a backing band that's full of dudes. And now has two women playing drums and bass. Yeah. So it was so great to see Tao live because I haven't seen her since that Rilo Kiley tour years and years ago.
What?
Nine?
Yeah.
2010? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. A while ago. And then because Kelly Quinn and Tao are friends from college, we got to all hang out and get some drinks afterwards. So that was a lot of fun, really gay, swapping gay gossip.
The dream.
Yeah, really. Nothing I love more than a night of gossiping about lesbians with other queers. So that felt pretty gay.
What a week.
Yeah. And now to top it off, we're going to get into this interview with, what do we say? One of the dykiest dykes that
one of the gayest people we've ever met. Truly.
So so much gayness, I'm just going to start vomiting rainbows. Today, we are diking out with comedian and activist Kristen Becker about culture shock. Kristen currently resides in Provincetown, where she's been producing and hosting Fruit Basket Comedy, as well as running her nonprofit Summer of Sass, which you'll hear more about in our conversation. She was also named Buffalo's Queen of Comedy by the Buffalo News. I'll forgive them. I'm just kidding. I done comedy in Buffalo once and has toured with various gay comedy shows around the country. Let's dive in. Kristen, it is so great to have you here and to see you again. We've missed you.
It's been a while. I missed you too. What's it been, like 2 weeks?
Couple weeks, yeah, since we were on the topless tour.
Oh, right. Yeah. Dunes and everything, not just comedy.
Mm-hmm. Though it was like 1 week where I felt like I saw you four times in 1 week. So I've really felt the absence of you in my life because I feel like you're the kind of person, once you're in someone's life, you make a lasting impression.
Yeah, you will never get rid of me.
Yeah, great.
I'm just always going to show up randomly every few days.
I hope so. Yes, all of our listeners, we've talked about Kristen before. Kristen runs the Topless Tours in Provincetown, the Dune Tours, and also hosts comedy there. Kristen, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
Okay, let's see. Pretty gay. start there.
Wearing a hat gay. That says queer, probably a shirt that says vagina or lesbian or dyke on it, right?
Actually, it says human. Okay.
In rainbow
but
colors.
In rainbow colors.
Rainbow colors. This was from a Loose in the Bible Belt tour. Here's the truth. The truth is that every article of clothing you've probably ever seen me wear is my merch from one point in time in my career or another. Yeah. And there is Love a it. Box of t-shirts under my bed that, like, when I run out of clean laundry, I pull a t-shirt. So that's the
That's
going
to be me in 5 years.
Yeah. That's Allie.
I just finally got some with my name on it, and that would be fucking weird. So I don't wear those. But I wear all the other ones.
Vaginas for Lovers. That shirt, that is your merch, right?
It is, yes.
Allie is the proud owner of one of those shirts now.
Yes.
A woman just approached her the other day and was like, what part of Virginia are you from?
Yes. Yes. All the time. Especially, so we get a lot of fall foliage tours up here in New England, right? And it's yes. a lot of elderly folk from Virginia a lot of times, right? And I know this because they come off the bus and they come walking up to me and they're like, oh my God, we're from Virginia. Oh. Right? Yeah. And then I'm like, but we're all from here. And then we laugh and it's a great time.
Oh, yeah.
That is true. We are all from
there. We're
Virginia.
All from there. I mean, there's your occasional C-section, but even that started. The oral
well,
story
the proximity.
Started.
It's in yeah. the neighborhood. Love it.
We are the world. Okay. Well, I think before we get into everything, I do yes. want to know, what is the gayest thing you did this week as one of the gayest people we know? I'm very interested in knowing. What's the gayest thing you did?
The gayest thing I did was, I mean, probably, I'm probably, can I be doing it right now? I am dog sitting my girlfriend's puppy so she can go see Kesha.
Yes!
Wow, yeah.
That's the, pretty the gay, layers. Right?
Yeah,
perfect. Love it.
Oh my God, Kesha's on tour? Love
Kesha's
it.
In New Jersey, I guess. She's in New York right now. Her and Andy are on their way to Jersey, I think, as we speak or something.
Andy Eigenthorpe, just another
gem of a
person
human.
We know. Yeah.
He's so gay. I do think that he outgays me.
Yeah.
You know, by a little.
It's two different types of gay, but yes, he Fair. Is like maximum gay man culture.
And that's why you compliment each
icon.
Other so well.
Yes.
For
yes.
your Fruit Basket comedy show on P-Town. You have a few more left.
It's a pretty good time.
Yeah, you have some fall dates coming up, maybe?
Yes. So, fingers crossed. Basically, you guys were here. You saw 6 p.m. was weird. It was a great time, but weird. We were packed to the gills last week and, like, insane. And, like, kind of realizing that we just had, like, there was the COVID scare and then there was all the other right. things. So, hopefully, yes. Being added every other week in the fall. We're hopefully should find out by the end of today or tomorrow if that's a go. And then
awesome.
We'll do it all over again.
Hell yeah.
Well, I know you didn't ask, but I would come back for that. Anyway.
Yeah, no, I think, anyway. No, I really think you should. I really think you should because it was a crazy COVID summer here. Like shit got weird all the time. And I think you should definitely come back for that. Maybe we'll do Women's Week or something.
Oh my yes. God. Yes. That'd be cool.
Sorry.
Women's
Week.
Throwing my
week.
Hat in the ring.
Women's Week for women. Wait, am I really like that gay, guys? This is what I need to know. Am I that
yes.
gay?
Yeah. I'm yes. sorry. Yes.
I think. Yes. Is it the Jeep or the scooter or the pit bull?
It's all of it.
It's everything. Like, Kristen, you're possibly the gayest woman I've ever met.
Wow. Do you know
and-
what?
Yeah.
Wow. Do you
this
know what's
This is like
weird?
Episode 202.
Do you know what?
Like, we interviewed Rosie O'Donnell, and you're like twice as gay.
Yeah.
Many have really? Come before you. But, like, here's the thing. I don't really feel like I fit in with lesbians that much. Right? Like, because
interesting.
I've always dated bisexuals. Like, that's a thing. And, you know, if you don't, I don't know if you met lesbians, sometimes they don't like those people. Right? Like, sometimes yeah. lesbians get mad about bisexuals. I generally have it. A very mixed friend group when I'm like, I like hanging out with women, of course, but like, I can't just do that. So, like, I am stereotypically right. in my being really gay, but like, I don't think I gay really well other than I'm really gay. Does that make sense?
I think you're just a well adjusted lesbian, is what it sounds like. You're not like so gay you're problematic, which
right.
can happen with lesbians.
A lot.
You're just like well adjusted, super gay, and we love that. I
okay.
also love that we do share a Buffalo connection, which I think I mentioned a little bit, but
yes.
have to go into it again because Kristen mentioned while she was hosting this show for Basket Comedy in P-Town that she was from Buffalo. I get on stage. I'm like, oh, I'm from Buffalo. So, of course, we have to have a conversation about it afterwards. I mentioned Roxy's, the now closed lesbian bar that used to exist in Buffalo. And Kristen used to MC for the Strip Teasers, which is the burlesque troupe that I saw religiously whenever I was in town. Whenever I was back from college, I would always go see them perform. So I'm pretty sure we've been in the same room before. And yeah,
I feel like we would have to be like, I'm trying to figure out the time frame, because now I'm like, well, I'm going to be offended if I wasn't such a good performer that you didn't remember me.
I was too busy drooling over Jamie. Okay,
that's fair. That's fair. Were the shows on the bar still, or were they on the stage at Roxy's when you would go?
I've seen both. So they started out on the stage when I started seeing them. And then I remember I came back one time, and that was the time when Jamie was pregnant. And then they were on the
right.
stage
was,
and no longer
I was
the
already
bar.
Gone. That was like, okay. I exited when Jamie was pregnant, basically.
Yeah.
Because I'm a deadbeat dad. So I had to run away. I kicked Carlo Palladino out of that bar one time.
Yes,
do you know who
please.
That guy is? You know who
I
that
know.
Guy is, right?
For our listeners, Carlo Palladino is this Republican just dick. Like, he sucks.
Dirtbag.
Yeah, he's such a dirtbag.
He would come
so shady.
He would come to Roxy's like late night, right? For, you know, I guess cocaine or whatever, but like
right. he was just, like the darts, what?
Yeah, would just show up and like, and for the strip teaser show, like, people bring their, oh, you gotta see the show, you gotta see the show. And so, like, my job right. on the bar was to, like, keep, I was security, right? I was the butch in the hat and the suit that kept, right? And so he, like, refused to, like, pick his drink up and move off the bar before the girls would dance on the bar. I'm like, fuck you, you gotta move it. And when he said something to the girl, he's like, show me your pussy or something, he said to this girl. And I was like, get the fuck out. Like, I don't give a fuck who you are. Get the fuck out.
Ew.
Yeah. He had to go. Yeah, no, he's gross. He's gross.
He's
when
so
he
gross.
Ran for governor, I told that story. And it got picked up, like, Western New York media picked it up at a show, and then they were filming, and then it went, and then Matt Al ended up calling Western New York media, and like, this is crazy. This is a crazy story. But that little dyke story made it all the way up.
I love it.
Yeah, it was
I
fun.
Love it. Yeah, I remember that the strip teasers did start bringing in a different crowd, because I was going there underage. I was slipping in before they started checking IDs at the door, but it was the only place that like a little lesbian like me could exist freely. So, and then sometimes there'd be cops that came in to watch the strip teasers, and I would just be in the corner just like, oh, why are they here? Like, are they here for the show, or are they going to arrest me? What's going on?
Which really says all you need to know about Buffalo and the police. Like, it really
right.
is the smallest town. Where
they didn't
you can,
care that I was there.
You can, yeah, no, yeah, they had no, they didn't care.
Yeah.
Somebody was paying somebody well enough that no one cared. Right.
Right. Right. Because I felt like I was obviously underage. Like,
but like, that's really queer culture, right? Like, that's something that like, even all right, not to like jump into it, but Summer of Sass, like the reason I do 18 to 20 year olds
yes.
is
yeah,
to, like,
let's get into it.
Like, well, no, like that idea, like I was led into a gay bar. I was led into Central Station in Shreveport, Louisiana by a woman named Jennifer who, you know, would open the side door and we would sneak in. And it was like, because it was the safest place to be was to be around other queer people. So like, when I started the program that I run now, it actually, like, we do 18 to 20 year olds because we learned everything in a bar with a drink in our hands. Like, we learned
right.
our intimacy, like gay people in gay culture, we learn intimacy and affection usually in a bar with a drink in your hand. And then we wonder
yeah.
why we have a high rate of alcohol and drug abuse in the queer community. And it's like, oh, all of our formation starts there. Like, we're not allowed to hold hands at the movies in a lot of places, or, you know,
right.
that kind of thing. No, but yeah. like, so part of like Summer of Sass is like why I try really hard to stick to 18 to 20 year olds is to like give them an experience of like being able to hold hands at the grocery store or the library or whatever before booze is involved. You know, I'm not saying they're not going to go get drinks somewhere. Of course they will. But like, you know,
yeah.
like the option of not.
No, that's amazing. So our topic today, we're talking about culture shock, and let's start there with Summer of Sass and back up a little bit and tell everybody what it is, because We loved learning all about this program as you were taking us on our topless tour of the dunes. But tell our listeners more about it, because it deserves more attention. And I wish I knew about it beforehand, too.
Well, thank you. So it's quite simple. Summer of SAS is a work relocation program, I guess, for lack of a better term. I identify kids normally in the Deep South or smaller towns, rural areas, who are queer. And we help move them to P-Town for the summer, right? So basically, we relocate them here. We subsidize their travel. We subsidize their rent. We pay the difference between what it costs for a kid to live here and what they can actually afford. We've been on the It Gets Better kick for a while as a community. But like,
right.
If you live somewhere where you can't fathom living queerly and freely, then you don't know what better looks like. And so what we're saying is this is what better looks like, at least from a queer perspective. Now, is it pretty white? Is it pretty rich? Yes. There's a lot of other things that happen in P-Town. But, you know, a lot of the kids that we bring in, because they present differently in, you know, Tyler, Texas, or Homer, Louisiana, or like somewhere small, they get stared at. They get picked on. They're possibly unemployable because, you know, with the exception of maybe, you know, a Dollar General or something, which there's nothing wrong with that, but it does limit your life dreams when you think you're going to max out, you know, this is the only thing you can do. So we bring them here and their freak game doesn't even register because everybody's a fucking freak. And, you know,
so they blend in. That way.
Yeah, they blend in and then, you know, they relax, truthfully. I was fortunate enough to have the idea and to have enough connections in the Deep South that if I made a few phone calls, that people would offer some, you know, a room in their house here, or groups in the South would just email out and say, hey, are there any kids? And so we help two or three kids a summer and we bring them here and we try to change their lives. So big, can I tell you about today's big win?
Yeah,
I know that I pushed this back about 15 minutes, but so one of our kids this year, Ethan, is from Defiance, Ohio.
Who I got to meet.
You got to meet
Ethan.
I
felt very fortunate to meet him. Yeah.
Yeah. So Ethan has Wolf's Parkinson syndrome in his heart, which is an extra electric pathway or something, right? And he's always wanted to get it fixed because it leads to arrhythmias and palpitations, and it kind of limits his cardio activity. But in his household, they weren't particularly into medicine so much, and he just hasn't ever had the opportunity to do it. And so he got MassHealth while he was here, and yesterday he went and he had a cardiac ablation done.
That's great.
Before his summer is over, he's like literally changing his life in a big way, like not only just exposing this other stuff, but like he, you know, we provide opportunity and what the kids do with that opportunity is up to them. And he has knocked it out of the park. And so they had to keep him overnight. They thought they were going to let him go yesterday, but because of weather and they decided to keep him. So today I had to go pick him up from Hyannis. And it just felt like a really big win. You know, like these kids really, it really proves that like just a little bit of an opportunity and space for them to be themselves, right? Like, I honestly don't do much. Like, the kids do the work. I shake money out of rich people. That's what I do, right? And I take that money and I redirect it to kids who need to be in this space for their own mental health, but they can't afford it because this place is really fucking expensive.
Yeah.
What's it like for them when they first get there? Because I know even for me, just coming to P-Town, I was like, oh, wow, I feel safe here. And I, you know, have lived in liberal cities before. But it's even like just to be around that many queer people. Is it a shock to them? Is it what they expected?
It's definitely a shock to them. One consistent thing they all seem to say or mention within the first 24 to 48 hours is, oh my God, I just saw gay people holding hands. Right. And a lot of them come from places where they've never seen queer people hold hands publicly. And so that is always like something that is said repeatedly. And it stuck out to me as a thing. It hits every kid differently. Right. Like, but there's always a little spin out time when they land. You know, like just for a minute where like they kind of go a little crazy, usually in whatever way they crazy, because it is a lot. Like it's a lot of freedom. It's a lot of
dick doc. No, I'm just kidding.
Don't think that they don't go. Like trust that or the bum beach, as it's being called now, which was boy beach.
Oh,
and then
yes,
it was
yes,
birthday
yes.
beach. And now they're like bum beach. And I was like, I like bum beach a lot, which is the nude beach where sexy things happen. So no, I mean, and that's, you know, that's part of it, which is also why this year we learned to incorporate a visit to Outer Cape Health and a little sex education beforehand, because this was, you know, this Beautiful. Was a kid who came from a fairly yeah. religious background. And it's like, I can't send this boy out into the wild with no like, hey, here's some sexual health knowledge that you need to have for yourself as you for navigate sure. being a grown up queer, you know?
Wow.
I've had kids like, they stop taking anxiety meds. They stop taking antidepressants. Like because they're just under less pressure, under less eyes looking and judging, right? Like, it's really quite simple. It's a very simple demonstration of what real freedom and being able to live authentically does for a person.
I bet. Is there like a community of them? Do they all keep in touch? Do you keep in touch?
So it's, everyone is different, truthfully, and some click and some don't, right? Like, it's always, they're all different. I generally am in touch with a lot of them. My favorite story of coming out of last year is, so there was Teddy from year one, and Teddy and Milo. Milo came year two, and they actually knew each other in high school, and I think dated for a second even. And Milo moved here year two, and then we brought in Alex, who was just happened to be working here in P-Town. He's from Lawrence, Mass. And then Nadine was a P-Town townie who was a young adult, and there weren't a lot of those around. And so the four of them became this little pod, and then they all just moved to New Orleans together. So they did like two Aww, years here. Yeah, cute. No, it's really cute. It's really cute. They did like two or three years here. And then, like, you know, P-Town isn't where a 22-year-old, where, some, listen, some kids come here, they love it, they love the beach life, they don't need anything more than that. But some kids come here and they're like, this is great, and they get their confidence, and they get their swagger, and they get their grown-up legs, and then they jump off and explore the world, which was fantastic. I love it. There's this yeah. little pot of them all living in New Orleans together, being gay as fuck, and that's where I lived when I was being gay as fuck, so I'm here for it.
Yeah, so you're from Buffalo, and mm-hmm. then what age did you move to Louisiana?
I was like 9.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was that like? Because
that's culture shock.
Right. Speaking yeah. of culture shocks, yeah, I no, can't really imagine a more different place than Buffalo, Louisiana.
Yeah, Buffalo, and not even cool Louisiana, like Shreveport, Louisiana, right? Like the upper, like southern Arkansas, eastern Texas, Louisiana, right?
Right.
Not New Orleans, Louisiana.
Yeah.
So I do remember, like, one of my first memories, I remember seeing a Klan rally in a Rite Aid parking lot when I was like 10. And like,
shit.
I just remember driving by and being like, and like my parents, like, just kind of ignoring it sort of thing, which, like, cause I don't think they were prepared for that either, truthfully. Right.
Yeah.
There wasn't like a cross burning as much as there was a lot of hoods and trucks. Like, it was fucking weird. And like, just, it was just a lot of learning a new culture that was completely foreign to anything that I knew, even though it was within my own country, right? Like, even right. so I was a pretty smart kid, but in Buffalo, and we moved to Louisiana, and I was in fourth grade, and I was failing all of my spelling tests, or like getting more wrong than I normally would, right? And I finally had to say to my mom, like, I don't understand the teacher. Like, her accent was so thick.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Like, I didn't know what she was saying, right? And so then my mom, like, wrote a letter, and I was like, all right, I guess. But no, that wasn't cool, because not only did I talk weird, right? And my mom had just cut off all my hair because it was going to be hot in Louisiana. So I was this round, like, little boy looking chunky baby dyke, basically, like, sauntering into this, like, Catholic school in Louisiana. And after my mom wrote a letter, the teacher, so sweet, so kind, but would look at me after she'd say a word. She'd be like, Kristen, did you get that? I'm like, fuck you, right? Like, you yeah. know? And then to top it off, this is the best part, actually. So I've always been in a Catholic school. In Buffalo, I went to Holy Angels. And okay. After I went to Holy Angels, I moved to Louisiana, and I went to Holy Rosary. But I still had some Holy Angels, like, hoodies around, right? Like, sweatshirts. And so sometimes I would wear a Holy Angel sweatshirt, right? And I remember being in Baskin Robbins with my dad after school one day in a Holy Angels sweatshirt. And like, this woman looking at her daughter and being like, don't stare. And like, so Holy Angels in Shreveport is for, like, special needs kids. So, like, I was wearing my Holy Angels sweatshirt in Shreveport, where the Holy Angels in that area was definitely for kids who had many disabilities. And I was just, like, there with my dad, not understanding. Yeah, it was, I mean, it was, there was an adjustment.
I was
going to
say, I mean, I guess not understanding Southern accents could be a disability down there.
Yeah. I mean, it was just really, I just could never figure out why people were, like, staring and smiling at me so kindly. And it was like,
you're getting like an extra scoop of ice cream.
Definitely. It was definitely. And then flip that around. I would go up to Buffalo and I got taught to ma'am and sir. Like, that's what you did in Louisiana, especially if you were in a Catholic school. You said, yes, ma'am. You said, yes, sir. Those are the manners. I come back to Buffalo, hang out at my friend's house. His mom says something. I'm like, yes, ma'am. And she's like, don't you get smart with me. And I'm like, wait, no.
Don't get fresh.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, no, that's... I can't win.
Allie still does the ma'am and sir, mm-hmm. too.
Still do it.
You see some people, it does offend, like, in a, like, age way.
yeah. Don't call me ma'am.
Yeah.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
And how long were you there for in that part of Louisiana?
So through high school and some college, I'm an initiated member of Zeta Tau Alpha, Centenary College, what? Did the sorority thing like a Southern lady should, and then...
Oh my God.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And then
back up.
Melody, don't break your head.
If you know it's good for you, so listen while we sing to you. Our songs are great and blue. Our crest is best. My test your sea will always treat you right. So raise your glasses high and drink to ZTA tonight. You'll find the girls as nice as they can be. So come along and join our dear fraternity. We got the pep, pep, go, go. Make sure I say hallelujah. I'm converted and I'll be a ZTA. Okay, so
okay. Yeah, we didn't even know about this little slice of culture shock before sitting down.
I honestly think I blocked it out until just now. I don't know what just happened. Yeah, no. So through like a year of Centenary College and where I did this is Southern business, right? Like,
right.
You go to colleges, you get in the right sorority, and then you're going to network and you're going to get this degree, and then you're going to work in oil and gas, and then you're going to have a nice 4-bedroom ranch, right? Like, this is basic Southern upbringing. You're probably going to marry that guy from high school, right? Like, or maybe the other school of town over. Ooh, rebel. You know?
Exotic.
Until a little bit of college, and then I went back to Buffalo in my early 20s for a hot minute. And then my parents were like, no, you really have to go to college. And then I moved to Natchitoches, Louisiana, and thought I was going to go to school there. And literally didn't go to class. I got a 0.0 for 2 semesters. I ended up I got a full-time job managing a restaurant in town. I slept in the, my parents made me go back to college. I was like, I don't want to fucking go to college. Like, this is not for me. I don't want the debt. I don't want any of it. Yeah. I'm not there. That's not what I want to do.
Right.
And so I just showed them by never going to school, being productive. I got a job. I was a manager of a restaurant, but I just, yeah, I would just sleep in the dorm for the two semesters until they kicked me out for having a 0.0. And then my parents understood.
And at what point here did you realize that you were this like alpha dyke?
I mean, I think I really blossomed in college. I mean, imagine you're like, everyone's going to class and you're like the dyke rolling in. Like, you know what I mean? Like from your night like, working like, at the bar.
You're like Angelina Jolie in that movie in Foxfire. Yeah. You don't really go to the school. You just wear leather and then hang out with the girls who go to the school.
Yeah, no, that's exactly like... what I did. Just in a rounder body. That's exactly what I did. Yeah,
just trying to tattoos everyone's breast.
Remember that?
There, yeah. Anyway, yeah. I watched it recently. Yeah. Anyway,
that would have been if I could have done poke and stick. That was called. What's it called?
Yeah.
If I could have done those tattoos, that would have been the ultimate. I think that was actually Casey Ferris. That was another girl that went to school with us. She's a lawyer now, though. She actually ended up going to class eventually.
Yeah, stick and poke to our younger listeners. Pick that up and then offer services. And I think that's a good way to explore your sexuality at that age.
Try it out. See who wants you. See who and where they want you to tattoo them.
Exactly.
So on and off, and then back to Buffalo in like early 2000s, and comedy school in Toronto in 2001, and then farting around telling jokes since then.
Comedy school.
Yeah, the Humber School of Comedy.
What was
Toronto,
that like?
That sounds Ontario. So Canadian.
Humber. So I got to tell you something. It is Humber College is a real school. So
yes.
I like honestly was like never a performer in high school. Like I was a jock. Like I played sports like a good fucking dyke. And I didn't do theater. I was for the boys. You know, like I didn't do any of that. And my girlfriend at the time found this program and it was an accredited. Basically, they took the idea of a 2-year of a theater degree and they made it all comedic arts. So stand up, sketch, acting for television, improv, physical comedy, you know, all of it. So you're falling and you're taking a voice class twice a week and you're learning what to do, how to use your voice and how to play with stuff. And you're taking a movement class and you're learning how to fall and you're learning how to stretch and you're learning how it's a full body performance, even if you're just doing stand up. And yeah, those of us who were primarily stand up were like, oh, this is stupid. But like, as we grew up, we learned like, wow, what a full all encompassing to be submerged with people who are like into comedy. And it was basically kindergarten for 20 year olds. I was like 24 at the time. I was a little bit older than everybody else. Yeah. So I did that and started comedy in Toronto and I love it. I love Toronto. It's one of my favorite cities.
How was the scene at that point in terms of women and gay people in comedy?
So there was Spirits, and Spirits was run by Joanna Downey. She hosted Spirits was like in the Toronto gay district, and Spirits was the best open mic, and it was every Wednesday, and she hosted it for like, she was a legend. She passed away, you know, and this was Joanna. And so at that point there was a woman running the best mic in town, which is honestly, I learned everything that I knew to running, like to run Nietzsche's in Buffalo and build a scene from watching Joanna do that in Toronto. And it was a woman run mic in a gay neighborhood. And so there was this fairly safe space for Deborah DiGiovanni and Nikki Payne and Richard Ryder and, you know, just a ton of people. Ryan Belleville, they like came out of there. You know, why can't Dave Mirage, like just like a bunch of people. It was one of the best mics. So I, you know, that part was pretty good. Now, if you don't want to go the club angle, you know, if I was talking about my girlfriend, even if I wasn't talking about fisting her, it was too dirty. Right. So like, and this is what I've always said, like part of the reason why I ended up starting Dykes of Hazzard was just me being, as you have stated, the gayest fucking person, you know, before I even really get to talking, right? Like just when I walk up on stage, right? Like, I mean, I did start comedy thinking, oh my God, I'm never going to tell people I'm gay. Like, it's none of their business. Like, I'm not. And then I realized that they spent the first minute of my set trying to figure out if I fucking knew I was gay.
Right.
You know? So it didn't look like I had a career path, no matter how funny I was, to authentically be as offensively gay as I was in a club setting where, you know, that you start in an MC and you work your way up. And right. If you're dirty, you can't be an MC because MCs have to be fairly palpable, or, you know what I mean? So it just became a conflict. But outside of the club, in the indie circuit, it was always pretty okay. I mean, I definitely look back now and I'm like, oh, fuck, wait, there was a ton of misogyny. But at the time, it seemed fine.
Yeah. Well, that's all that matters.
Yeah, at the time, I was getting stage time and I was funny, so it seemed fine.
And it's not like that much has changed in the club scene. I mean, you can talk about being gay now, but only a few people who've had to prove themselves 90 other ways first before they can actually get like a headlining spot or something. Like,
yeah. I mean, that's kind of one of my favorite parts about P-Town is like the rich lesbian comedy history, right? Where like Suzanne Westenhofer plays here during the summer, and like a lot of mainstream people don't know who Suzanne Westenhofer is. And like Suzanne Westenhofer was fucking out on stage before Ellen even thought about thinking about telling people she was a lesbian, right? Like you go back and you're like, oh shit, wait, hold on. You know, Leah Delaria was on Arsenio Hall in like 94. Like, no disrespect to Ellen, but like there were people who did it without working their way up pretending to be straight. There were people who did it just being fucking gay the whole time, right? Which I feel like should get a little bit more credit, which I think Leah's getting now, but I'd love to
see. Was Judy Gold out back then?
I don't know.
Okay.
Unsure. How long is... I don't remember.
You know, I read her book and I think she talks about it then, but I think she was pretty much out for a while. I don't...
I feel like Judy's like 10 years younger than like... I don't know. How old is Judy, honestly? I don't know. I feel like there was like Suzanne and Leah and then like...
I want to say, I mean, Judy's in her 50s.
Huh.
Okay, so a little bit older than I am. I think Leah might be 60 now. I don't know. We'll have to do lesbians who do meth.
I know.
We need a chart. We need a chart of lesbians and comedians and how old
58.
They are.
I was going to say that Judy, I thought, was around the same age as Rosie, and Rosie's 59. So.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, hold on.
I have to do everything in relation to Rosie O'Donnell. That's how my whole life operates. Mm-hmm.
Can I tell you that, like, and so Leah's 63. Leah's 63. I was known for in the dorm where I went to school, where I went to sleep and didn't go to class. I would get up and watch the Rosie show before I would go to work and be like, I'm going to do that one day. And they were like, Becca,
yes.
You're nuts. Like that was, I would get up and watch Rosie and
hell
get
yeah.
things to slingshot at people. And they're like, what are you doing? Yeah. I'm like, this is what I'm studying. I'm studying this. Like, this is what I want to do.
Love it. Love it. And then in Buffalo, you were trying to build up the scene there, which how was that when you got there? It didn't exist much, or it was just all hacky dudes?
It wasn't even a lot of anything. It was Comics Cafe was in, you know, kind of in the burbs in kind of like a strip molly vibe. Let's unpack this trauma. I did.
Let's go.
Now that you mentioned it, there was a Buffalo's Funniest competition that Comics Cafe ran. And in one of the first rounds, I did really well. And I was working at a theater at the time, and I brought all my like theater friends. And the guy before me was like super homophobic and like didn't read the room, and like nobody laughed. Right. And like I killed because I was good and not homophobic. And when I made it to the finals I basically got pulled into the office to be reprimanded that, like, just so I know, you know, they won't handle any heckling. I was like, all right, well, then they shouldn't be homophobic. Like, I don't know. Because, like, my friends were, like, not having it. They were, like, theater pros in town. And they were like, nah, this guy, you know, this guy's shit. But I ended up getting, like, reprimanded by the owner before the competition started about, like, my audience or whatever. And I was like, it was crazy.
Your audience?
Yeah, my audience. Because I was the gay one, right?
Getting everyone all riled up.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So, fast forward to, like, right around 2004-ish, I moved back to Buffalo, and I ended up there after Katrina. It was right before Katrina. I moved before Hurricane Katrina 16 years ago. So like 2 months before that, and needed an open mic, and there wasn't one. And I had gone to school in Toronto. So I had comics. Basically, I was like, all right, well, I have comics in Toronto who want longer sets. right? Newer comics who want longer sets. I'll offer 10 to 15 minute sets. Kind of similar to what I'm doing here.
I was just
and hoping to pull from Boston. Yeah, like that. I'm going to offer longer sets in hopes that people make the trip until I put an open mic portion until I have enough local comics to sustain a weekly show. Right. And so that's what I did. Every week I gave some gas money and bought some pizza for four Toronto comics to walk to come down. And then we had about five or six Buffalo guys. And then it just slowly built. And then I started teaching classes. And I know fucking comedy classes are whatever. But the truth is that it was really good for me. And I don't charge too much. And I don't fucking write racist jokes for you. And I help you figure out your shit for a few weeks. Right. And some people just work better having a practice stage. So I gave them, I was so sick of people asking me about comedy that I was like, if I'm going to do this, you guys have to pay me. Like literally, like if we're going to do this, then here's the thing. We'll make it cheap. It's $100. Come meet us, whatever. Right. And then slowly started to build a little scene, and we started a Dykes of Hazzard variety hour. So I was running a sketch show and a stand-up show every week and just like getting a little bit of a buzz going. And then, convinced the guys at Helium that it was club ready and it was time for club. Everyone tells me that I had to create a mainstream in Buffalo so I could be the underground comic in Buffalo, basically. So yeah, we brought Helium and I GM'd that for a year that I hated and they hated me doing it. So it was amicable that way. And and then I left and it's still there. And comedy, there's probably over 100 comics in town now that like, you know, do stuff. A lot of them moved to New York. Matt Wayne, Sean Murphy, Mark Walton. Like there's been Dan Fisher. There's been some guys, Kyle Turner, who have all gone to Joe Pera.
Yeah.
Right. Like he used to do Nietzsche's a bit. I love that kid. I've never seen him break character once, so I don't know anything about that guy.
Same. I'm like, right.
Right. I'm like, this could be you. I don't know, man.
I think the one time that he like sort of maybe was when I was like, hey, I'm from Buffalo. And he's like, oh, mm-hmm. And then was just like, it was a little bit more movement than I was used to from him.
Right. So that was Buffalo.
So continuing on Culture Shock.
Oh, yes.
You started a tour of shows called Loosen the Bible Belt.
Yes.
What made you want to do this?
Famously tight.
This is really like okay, actually we'll progress the story. So Helium, I'm doing it, I'm running it, it's great. I never wanted to open a comedy club. My fiance got really sick, she didn't have any health insurance. I convinced these guys to invest it so I would have a real job. I was doing the right thing. Let me stay in comedy, stop independent producing, do this thing. And I hate it, I quit it. My fiance leaves me for this dude. After I like had stopped.
After you got our health care.
After I left the road, stopped performing, got a real job in comedy, convinced someone to build $1 million club in Buffalo. Do you know how hard it was to convince someone to invest $1 million in Buffalo? It took me a year. Okay. And then like before it opened, she like,
I feel like you're the only person who's figured that out, how to get anybody to invest money in Buffalo.
Right.
It took a lot of persistence. And so she left me, and then I had this job that I hated, not for any other reason other than I was a performer. I didn't want to manage a club. I don't like charging that much for drinks. I want my feature comics to be put up. Like, it just didn't vibe with me at all. And so I went into a pretty depressive hole, and I wrote a blog about why I thought Louisiana should be at the forefront of queer equality in the South. And it got picked up amongst like Louisiana Democratic Party and like just some progressive Southerners. And they asked me to come testify before the Louisiana State Senate on behalf of a non-discrimination act, the Louisiana Non-Discrimination Act. And so I did. I went down. I did a few shows called Becker on the Bayou. We raised money for...
You're so good at names. I mean, I love it.
Thank you. We did Becker on the Bayou and we raised money for Forum for Equality. And while I was down there, when I was debating my humanity with other people who were fighting against my rights, they were speaking to me in a language that I didn't speak, and that was Bible. And so I couldn't win arguments in a language that I didn't speak, right? Like, I can talk to my humanity, but I can't fuck with your religion because I don't really know it that well.
Right, because anybody who went to Catholic school knows that you actually don't do much with the Bible in Catholic school.
No, no, you get a lot of the morality.
I grew up Catholic, and yeah, like they're not really like Bible heavy.
Right, yeah, that's an evangelical Christian thing, right? That yeah. like I don't do, and or a Baptist thing even. And like a lot of that happens in the South. And so I was like, oh wow, I really need. Here's a defining moment. I'm testifying for the Louisiana State Senate, and the guy, they're talking about like banks or whatever, and like getting a loan and discrimination. And they say, "What now? What is gender presentation? Like, what is that?" And I had already testified, so I just like I had a tie on, so I just like raised my hand and like kind of walked down. I was like, "Oh, it's me wearing this tie." And he was like, "What?" And I was like, "He was like, so what you're saying is you think if you go into a bank, they're not going to give you a loan because you're wearing that tie." And I was like, yes. And he's like, well, then you sue him. And I was like, we can't. That's the whole reason we're here. That's the point of it, right? And his head basically exploded and smoke came out of his ears. And he just leaned back and he was like, oh, never mind. Like, he just couldn't process it. So it was basically after that experience that I realized that if I was going to make a real difference in the Deep South, that I was going to need somebody who could talk Bible. And I knew that Jay Baker had been a progressive pastor for a while. I knew his mom, Tammy Faye Baker, had a great relationship with the queer community. And I knew he wasn't that busy because he answered my tweet, right? So
now for people who might be international or maybe younger, explain Tammy Faye Baker.
Jim and Tammy Faye Baker were the original founders of PTL Ministry. They were TV evangelicals who became fairly world renowned. They're about to release a new movie, The Eyes of Tammy Faye.
Yes.
With Jessica Chastain playing Tammy Faye and Andrew Garfield playing Jim Baker. Yeah.
I didn't know. I just got goosebumps. I love him. Okay, cool.
So I just found a guy who was straight and who was preaching a loving Christ. And I was like, hey, why don't you and I tour through the Deep South and we'll try to get, you know, religious people and gay people. Sometimes we'll do two things. Number one, we'll give my friends who did grow up with religion something that feels safe to them. And a lot of this was guilt that gay marriage had passed in New York State. Like, make no mistake. There was also something in me that, like, I had rights that people I grew up with didn't have. Right. I could, and the, you know, before it was a federal thing. And so that's what we did. I called Jay. I tweeted him and I was like, I like the cut of your jib. And we went back and forth a bit and we just both flew to Dallas and got into a van together as strangers and started going through the Deep South. And we brought an opening comic and then like a musical act. So basically the idea was we don't play any churches. We don't play any gay bars if we can help it. There were definitely places in the South that wouldn't have us except if we were a gay bar, if we were in a gay space. So that was a whole interesting thing. Oh, there were definitely gay spaces who thought it was a trick. They were like, is this a bait and switch? Like, you're not going to come in here and, you know, be demeaning to queer people. I'm like, no, we're a show that has a Christian aspect and has a queer aspect. And when he would literally preach Jesus Christ and I would tell dirty lesbian fisting jokes. And like, at some point, everyone was uncomfortable at some point in the show, which is a really, you know, bonding effect on a room. And that's what we did. We did that for like 4 or 5 years. And then pandemic, we rolled it into a podcast and then pandemic. And now, yeah, we haven't. I ran out of producing juice, truthfully. I was putting the whole thing together and like it just became a lot to manage.
For sure.
Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, so when Jay Baker came out, like that was kind of a big.
Oh, he's not. He's straight.
Don't they have a gay son?
No.
Or maybe did I just think he was gay?
You thought he was gay because he hits kind of like he does feel a little gay. He feels a little gay. But here's the thing. He came out as gay affirming, right? So they did a documentary about him, One Punk Under God. That's where I like learned of him. And he like in his church was like, it's wrong to be against gay people.
Okay.
Is there another evangelical who had a gay son that came out that I'm getting confused with?
Maybe everyone thinks that he's gay. And one of the best things he said to me, he was like, I know, like, everyone thinks I'm gay, and that's cool. Like, I don't care. Like, you know, he's like, but, like, Tammy Faye Baker's my mom. He's like, and I used to go out with her all the time. He's like, you don't think that, like, you know how many guys have offered to suck my dick? like, in all seriousness, like, if I wanted to be gay, I would totally have already been. I'd have tried that. Like, you know, he's like, he really likes women.
You know, I honestly think that it is him, and I just thought he was gay. But it was just because he was like pro gay that okay.
Yeah, a lot of people do, and yeah, he's just really a very good ally.
I was gonna say I think he gets the award for top ally.
Yeah, he actually did. I think Glenn gave him one. Yeah,
good. Yeah, good. Of all the people they're dishing out those awards to, I'm skeptical about half of them. I'm like, what have they really done?
This was like 2012 when he did that. So like it was a ballsy move. He lost a lot of his funding for his church at the time, and it's like kind of slowly been rebuilding. So yeah, so he and I didn't make a bunch of money, but we had a great time. We heard some great stories. We had a lot of people, a younger generation of Christians who had never really heard of a loving Jesus. I literally had young people say this who were like, wow, I've only been taught the fire and brimstone, you're going to hell if you're gay Jesus. And we're like, yeah, here's a whole nother hippie Jesus. Try him out if you want. If that's your thing, you know.
Hippie socialist Jesus. Yeah.
Exactly.
OG Jesus.
I would always joke with him, like the audience would be tense at different points. I'd be like, listen, when we talk about the gay stuff, the Christians are going to get uncomfortable. When we talk about the Jesus stuff, the lesbians might get a little uncomfortable. Like, that's just what it is. But like, at least you guys know lesbians exist, right? Like, we can prove that. And then we all laugh.
Were there any people who you felt like people who came up after the show whose minds were changed one way or the other? Like any lesbians who are like, wow, I always felt excluded from religion, or any religious people that were like, I'd never met a lesbian and you ain't half bad. Like,
yeah. Yeah, no, there were. And, you know, there's a lot of good reason for the queer community, LGBTQ community to feel apprehension around religion, because it has been used as a weapon against us for so long, right? And so there were definitely people who, you know, would talk afterwards about how they had felt something they hadn't felt in a while in a way of acceptance, or people, this one woman was like, we weren't that scary. And I was like, thanks. And I even would save my really, really gay stuff for after he preached, because nothing says following scripture like fisting, right? So like I would literally like wait, because, you know, Jay was obviously more famous than I am. And so I knew that he would have a draw there, and I didn't want to assault their senses, right? Like baby steps. So I would say after he would preach, like, if anybody wants to go, now is your chance, because these last two, they're real doozies, right? Like, this is your opportunity to leave. And no one ever left. They always stay, because at that point in the show, they've kind of get it. We've talked about it, like how we're just trying to prove that people can have different ideas and share space in a room together without the sky falling, you know?
It's funny. I did a mic the other night in Jersey. I just felt I had like a not so great set at Mohegan Sun. It was like a weird crowd. I went up first after the host, whatever, and I wasn't feeling great. So I'm like, I just need to go like somewhere and feel a little bit better. And the place I chose was just like this New Jersey Republican town, this like pizza place. And the good thing was for a mic, they were giving 8 minutes. So I'm like, well, at least I have 8 minutes. And then there was an audience, the pizza place, but it was all like Republican boomers.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, here we go again. But it was actually a great experience, and there's something about winning over a crowd that you think probably normally wouldn't like you.
That's why I'm so glad I started in the Midwest, honestly. Like, I New York comics would come into Chicago and like do sets. It's a more middle ground there, even Chicago. And they would bomb, like, and just like really hot comics coming in from New York or LA. But I don't know, having to do comedy in the Midwest, or like doing weekends in Indiana or like Rockford, Illinois, and like getting out into the Midwest, I feel like I was always put in that position and terrified. But it is such a good feeling
when you have to work a little bit harder to connect with the audience. Like when you recognize that, like, the connection, they have to see your humanity first, or else you're just like the weird queer. Like, it changes something. I did a room in Tonawanda, New York, outside of Buffalo. It was like Mr. Denny's biker bar. Like, it was, and they were
my,
like,
mom lives right by there.
Yeah. And so somebody started a mic there years ago. I just moved back. I was like maybe 7 years in or so. And same thing, right? Like, they're like, oh, Becker, we don't know about this. I was like, guys, it's fucking fine. Like, I've been doing this for a while, right? Like, and half of me is like half redneck biker. So it's fine. Don't worry. Like, I'm going to talk about titties. It's going to be great. Watch this. Right? Like, but you realize that, like, you really have to win them over in a really, like, connected way. Like, I'm a fucking person. You're a person. And once you see that I'm a person, you're going to laugh at this shit, fucker.
Right. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That just reminds me. Years ago, I performed at a show and Sarah Palin was there.
Oh, yeah.
And I was so excited about this. And she liked my set. We talked afterwards, but she was relating to my jokes about my mom, and she was there with her sister and one of her daughters, and not the one who keeps getting pregnant, the other one. And
because doesn't her nephew do stand up?
Her nephew does stand up. That's why. What? Her nephew is this kid from Alaska who moved to New York, and he did stand up. So he happened to be on the same lineup of the bar show that I was on, and I'm like, there's. It'll be crazy if she's here tonight, but I knew there was a chance, and I walk in and she's right there. But she was like, my sister and I were laughing about how our mom is exactly the same, and just like relating that. Meanwhile, though, my friend Brooke Arnold goes up, who's like from Texas, had a very like religious culty upbringing and broke free of it. So she had a lot of like abortion material and stuff. And I'm just watching Sarah Palin's face the whole time, and she is not happy, like not connecting there. And then afterwards I was like, oh, I actually feel like a little bit slimy that Sarah Palin, you know, was like,
that you,
good job, Carolyn. And then Brooke, who has like such like smart, great comedy about abortion stuff, where I'm like, my mom's depressing. Like,
but it takes everybody. It takes a whole village to fucking upset Sarah Palin, right? Like,
right.
You know, it's one of those things where it's like, man, I can see, this is where I'm like, I don't think I'm a very good lesbian, because I am like always trying to find the middle ground, like, and I don't know, you know, like,
I am too, though. Yeah. Because my Brooke afterwards was like, I can't believe you got your picture with her. I was like, look, I disagree with Sarah Palin's policies and everything, but like on a human level, I also think that what happened to her was like super shitty, like the sexism and all of that stuff. Like, mm-hmm. I could recognize, like, even though some of the stuff she supports, all the stuff that she supports, everything, it's horrible. But like, I can also see her as a human. I also know that there are nuances. And I think, like, also living in the South, I spent 6 or 7 years in Georgia, like, that will teach you that, you know, getting yourself out of your comfort zone and being around people and realizing, like, yeah, they may have horrible politics, but at the end of the day, there is a human connection.
Right. Yeah. And they're allowed to have their, if I want to have my crazy, like, to them, crazy liberal agenda, then, like, I mean, right. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I have so many friends that even like when I go south still and I see the news, like, I had a really progressive friend who had like a gun on her nightstand. And I was like, what is that about? And she's like, you know, and I was like, oh, right. Your media is a lot of fear. Like, you're the news that you're being, you know, the things, Fox is on every hotel lobby, not CNN, right? Yeah. Like, Fox is on at the gym. Like, and you realize that, like, people are existing in a culture where it's being created before our very eyes, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. It's crazy too, because I've worked jobs with people who are, you know, known Republicans, and some people, like, you know, you see on Twitter, especially, people trying to get people fired for having conservative views. I'm like, well, even Republicans need jobs. Like, everybody, you need a job to have healthcare in this country. And
you don't
know,
want them unemployed and on QAnon message boards and just
exactly.
Getting even worse. I mean, I'm sorry.
Keep those hands busy.
Yes. Right. Like,
those dangerous hands.
Those prone to violence hands.
I'll be the judgmental. I'll be the, yeah.
If you try to like marginalize and harm a group, you know, regardless of what you think of their opinions, they're it's just going to push them further away. You're just going to get further, I think, from what your goals are of having them maybe come around and see you like as a human. But then if, you know, if you're the person who gets them fired because you found something that they posted in, you know, 2006.
Right.
And then you email it to their boss. Oh, you think they're going to come around on gay people? They're going to hunt you. Like,
you are not changing their mind in any way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're solidifying the bullshit. But then you go, like, all right, well, like, but it's not, you know, some people are like, well, I'm not doing that labor. And it's like, okay, we're not asking you to do that emotional labor. I'll do it. I can do it right now. I'll do it right now.
Yeah. Not everybody wants to do it. Not everybody has to do it. But if you're up to doing it, great. And there are people who are up to doing that labor. And like, honestly, Kristen, you're one of my favorite people that that I've met this summer because of all the things you do. It's like really inspiring. You do really important work. And it's like such an honor to have someone like you in the community.
Truly.
Oh, wow. Wow. Thanks, y'all. It's really mostly just dick jokes and money out of your
fisting. It all comes back to fisting, to your dirty fisting jokes.
And fake dick jokes. Yes, that's really, that'll get you through life, honestly. Fist your way through life, ladies.
That's more merch. That's another t-shirt.
I feel like, you know, it just like real quick, but that like, that's kind of what Summer of Sass is to me. Like, I feel like at my core, I believe people are good when they're allowed to be themselves, when they're allowed to be their authentic selves. And even if that means that their authentic self has a different belief than I do or whatever, I think at the end of the day, when you have human connection and you humanize people and you connect with them and they get to be themselves fully without fear of someone judging them, whatever that is, that like, that's really where the magic happens. And that's where you start to heal divisiveness, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does Summer of Sass have a website we can direct our listeners to?
Yeah. Yes. How can people get involved?
Summerofsass.org or .com. They all point to the same space because I'm no dummy.
Hello. And,
summerofsass.org. And we're hoping there's going to be a big fundraiser coming up on the horizon. We're trying really hard to shake some rich gays and get $1 million and buy a house, because then it becomes a year-round thing and not just a summer thing. And
come on, Rachel Maddow, open up your house.
I know, right? Rachel's got a house here. I really feel like it should be something that we can make happen fairly soon, like that there's so much money around here and that the next generation of queers deserve the luxury that the people who live here had. And that is to be able to come here and be in this space that really they really desperately need, like for their own healing and their own growth, and like to undo what society, our general, you know, rural, judgmental, religious society has done to these kids, is like just give them some space. And so, yeah, all those dinks out there, double income, no kids, let's go. Cough it up.
Dinks.
Double income,
love
no
that.
Kids, you know.
Never heard that. Yes. I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
I heard it for the first time a couple years ago. And yeah.
It's two so CEOs, right? It's two rich gay boy CEOs or something, right? No kids.
Right, right. And then how can people follow you and your comedy and stay on top of what's next from Kristen Becker?
Because so Kristen hits the road. Sorry.
Yes. She does. She does. She does hit the road. KristenBecker.com. KristenBecker.com. Does all the things. Actually, I'm glad you said that because I got a couple college gigs coming up in September and I got to put some stuff down. And yeah, yeah. KristenBecker.com. Lots of fun things in the fall.
Nice.
And you guys come back. Y'all come back.
Yeah, please. I'm dying to get back.
And do some fruit basket.
It was a great 24 hours I spent there and you made it so much fun.
Yay!
tour. Guys, book a topless tour even if you're in P-Town. You're so knowledgeable. I mean, I learned so much.
Yay! That does make me look like pretty gay, right? Like this field trip lesbian. Okay, fair. I get it, guys. Yeah, I see what you're seeing now. I see what you're seeing. Okay, all right, fair. The Jeep and the comedy. All right, yeah, okay. And here's my not-for-profit.
Yeah. Truly. From all angles. Yay!
And my rescue pit bull. Okay, all right. I see what's happening here. And my hot young girlfriend. All right. Okay. All right. I see.
Okay.
and hanging out at the club.
Yeah, exactly.
May I present this to you, Kristen?
Oh, virtually. Yes.
Oh, wow.
This is, virtually.
If we were recording in person, like before times, we would present this to you. This is our Gay Champion of the Week trophy.
Yay!
I feel yes. like we should ship it to you for a year.
Thank yes. you. I love it. I love it.
Love it.
Thanks so much, Kristen. It's been great diking out with you.
Thanks, Kristen.
Thank you.
Well,
oh boy.
If you didn't think that this episode was exciting enough already, we have some more just groundbreaking news. Our first listener question submitted by a man.
Cis man, yeah.
By a cis man, yeah.
Okay, let's get into it. I'm the husband of a bi woman who has recently started to explore her interest with women. She fell head over heels for this girl, and then the girl's husband got jealous, so she had to break it off. Meanwhile, I was completely okay with this whole relationship. I am completely devoted to my wife and love her unconditionally, so I knew there was nothing to worry about with her leaving me for this girl. And if that makes her happy, I was completely okay with it.
A lot of completelys.
Yeah. It's a completely supportive king. Okay. How do I help her get over this heartbreak? I know it's more intensified because it was her first queer relationship. Also, am I really the oddity when it comes to guys not being bothered by their wife having a relationship with another woman? Because that's what everyone tells me.
This is a message we got on Twitter, and I hope that the information or the advice is still timely. Well, I don't hope she's still heartbroken, but we're going to answer it anyway in case anybody's going through this scenario, or maybe some of you... maybe there are husbands of bi women who listen, or maybe there are bi women who may need to share this with their husbands.
Okay,
but
yeah.
I mean, in terms of helping her get over the heartbreak, the same stuff you would do for a friend, you know, let them know that it's going to be okay. It's probably for the best. There'll be other opportunities because it seems like you're completely cool with her exploring this side of herself. And, you know, tell her to give a listen to Dyking Out if she's not already. She'll learn that the first relationships are always a tough one, and you mm-hmm. always think they're everything, and they always carry all the feelings, and they feel the most important. And the reality is that they never are.
Yeah.
And that in hindsight, you're like, oh, wow, I can't believe I was this broken up over that. So I think, you know, if she finds community, like maybe she can explore spending more time in some queer spaces, if you're supportive of that, which it sounds like you might be, so that she just knows that that wasn't the only time in her life. Because I imagine that if she's bisexual and this is her first time exploring interest with women, that maybe it was the first time that she really felt like in touch with her queerness and felt like, oh my gosh, this thing I've been wanting to express or this thing I've been feeling, I can finally act on it. And then to have it break up, it probably felt like it was ripped away from her. And she's probably a little scared, but it sounds like you're being super supportive. Even the fact that you reached out to a podcast called Dyking Out with this question, you're doing good things, hubby.
Yeah, completely. Yes, it probably does feel like she not only broke up with this woman, but she broke up with her queerness, you know?
Yeah.
And like you said, first queer relationships are the source of 85% of our listener questions. And for a reason, it's a big deal. It feels like so heavy because it's not just a break any regular. It's like it feels like you're breaking up with a part of you. Like an identity thing. So there's so much wrapped into it. And I think finding, like you said, community, even listening to these, skip ahead to any given Dyking Out listener question at the end. No, like she'll feel probably less alone, but definitely talking to other, specifically bi women who have either gone through this or are currently going through this would help.
And in terms of your other question about are you the oddity when it comes to guys not being bothered, I don't know how odd it is. I would say it may feel odd in general to feel that secure in your relationship, regardless of your sexuality or your gender. A lot of people are, you know, used to, I think we're fed this narrative that of monogamy and everything. And that's fine. And monogamy, it's the right thing for a lot of people. But if you're okay with it and, you know, you feel so secure in the way that you feel about her and the way that she feels about you, and you seem to care mostly about her happiness and her living her best life, that's an awesome place to be, man. Congrats for you. And don't let other people make you feel weird about that. As long as you and your wife are communicating, then you are okay. If you're not communicating and you're feeling fine, you know, it doesn't sound like it's a situation where you have your head in the sand and there are red flags everywhere. It sounds like you're in a relationship where you two trust each other to be open and honest about this stuff, and that's great.
Yeah, it seems like the communication is flowing. And it's not that you're the oddity. It's just that that is rare. And yeah, regardless of gender orientation in relationships. And I think people are just projecting their own insecurities onto you.
Right. Yeah, because I can see some other people, you know, immediately
people get threatened.
They think about their own relationship.
Even finding out about their friends opening up their relationship. Like, it does trigger something in people, my own girlfriend included. She will admit to it. Like, when we hear about friends opening their relationships, I'll just give a heads up, like, I'll tell Allie, because, you know, she's so fiercely monogamous that it's like, it does, she, like, a lot of people have abandonment issues, and it does kind of trigger something in them when they hear about other people effortlessly, or not effortlessly, there's a lot of effort, but just even open to opening the relationship or successfully doing it, you know?
Yeah. And that's cool too, that you're talking about it with people, because that's also a hard thing to do. But to me, it just says that you're very secure with yourself and your relationships. And that's my favorite kind of dude.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dude who's got nothing to prove and who's communicating and supporting the people that he loves. So good on you,
go out,
husband,
dude.
Of bi woman.
Bi wife energy. You hear that song on TikTok?
Yes, okay. Yes.
Okay. Well, Mel singing, it's time to go.
Yep. If you have a question, you can send it to dikingout@gmail.com. That is the preferred way. We did let this Twitter DM slide, though we put it to the back of the line. But you can send in your questions, and we'll answer them at the end of our episodes. You can follow us for exciting videos. If you really want to be on the pulse of the cool things that are happening, you got to be following us at dikingout on Instagram. We have an intern, Julia, who is killing it, raising our social media game. We'll get it over to TikTok eventually, but for now, follow us at Diking Out on Instagram, Twitter, and find us on TikTok if that's your thing. Like us on Facebook even. What? Follow me at TGI Carolyn.
You can follow me at Melody Kamali.
Thank you so much for listening.
We'll see you next Tuesday.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.